club of almost a quarter of £1 billion. Chris Keefe reports.
13 months after the controlling Glazer family announced it was looking for new investors, the Ineos Sport Group has bought a 25% stake. The deal means the controversial American owners retain their majority share in the Old Trafford club. The agreement still needs to be approved by the Premier League, a process which will likely take around 6 to 8 weeks. It's thought Sir Jim will take charge of footballing operations while the Glazers focus on the business side.
Women's rights group, the Fawcett Society, is calling on the Home Secretary to resign. James Cleverly has apologised for joking during a Downing Street reception about giving his wife a date rape drug. Hours earlier, the government set out plans to crack down on spiking. A man's been arrested after a woman and her two dogs died in a suspected hit and run in East London. Marie Theobald was struck as she walked her pets in Chingwell on Friday afternoon. The 48-year-old's family have released a statement describing her as an honest, hard-working, selfless woman. The US has shot down four drones headed towards an American destroyer in the southern Red Sea. Houthi rebels in Yemen, who are backed by Iran and support Hamas, have targeted vessels in recent weeks. Chelsea have suffered a 2-0 loss at Wolves in the first Premier League fixture on Christmas Eve since 1995. It means the Londoners have now lost four consecutive away matches in the top flight. Boss Mourinho says they need to start putting away their big chances.
Of course, it's confident, yes. It's about quality, of course. It's about too many things that we should score. And if we want to win the games, yes, now it's difficult because it's after the game always that we feel very disappointed.
Elsewhere, Rangers celebrated Christmas early with a 2-0 win at Motherwell. It means they're now 2 points off the top of the Scottish Premiership. That's the latest. I'm Barry Weir.
Weather on Phoenix FM. Proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
Tonight will be breezy and mild. It will start largely dry with variable cloud, but it will cloud over with rain edging in from the southwest towards the end of the night. Tomorrow, Christmas Day, it's going to be largely overcast, wet with wind, a sweeping rain, persisting throughout much of the day whilst remaining breezy.
Phoenix FM, sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company, proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit sehbac.com for help with your home.
Hello and welcome to the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM. It's Christmas Eve, and I'm joined by Spencer for a special show which will throw us across the world, into the TV, and back in time to the traditions of yonder year to help us and you prepare for an amazing day tomorrow.
We've also got a full-on Christmas playlist covering popular Christmas songs, and some you don't feel get enough airtime, and a very special hello from some bunnies you might remember from last year.
So let's get on with it. I'm Natalie.
And I'm Spencer, and this is the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM.
Another year before our wedding, Ebenezer.
Well, it can't be helped, Belle. How could we marry now? There's not even enough for a decent home. The investments haven't grown as they should.
So you said last year.
Business continues to be poor.
You're a partner in your own firm now.
I'm barely clearing expenses.
You said the partnership was the goal.
This is for you. I love you, Belle.
You did once. There was a time when I was sure that you and I were truly one, that our future was forever and would never come undone, and we came so close to being. Cared for me.
I like that little interlude from Rizzo at the end of his crying.
Oh.
So do you know why I played that, Spencer?
It's because it's the Muppets Christmas Carol.
Partly because it's because it's the Muppet Christmas Carol.
A brief thing of Michael Caine singing.
Yes. So we watched we watched a film last night that had Michael Caine in it. So when it came to choosing the musical number for Phoenix FM, I thought I'd go straight in there with The Love Is Gone. So Charlotte hasn't chosen that this year, but this is Charlotte's favourite Christmas film. So I thought I would choose it for her. So When Love Is Gone is performed by Belle in the Muppet Christmas Carol as she laments the end of her relationship with Ebenezer Scrooge. The song is reprised later in the film as When Love Is Found and sung during the end credits by country singer Martina McBride. So this is also a hot topic for anyone that loves this film and was really into it in the 90s. So with the VHS release of The Muppets Christmas Carol, you got this song, the one that we just played, with a bit of Michael Caine singing at the end. But when it was re-released in 2012 as a Blu-ray, they cut it out. And there was uproar, even to the point where one day I got a phone call late at night from my brother asking me to find on the internet a version of this song with Michael Caine singing so that I could play it down the phone to his friends who would not believe that Michael Caine had ever sang in a musical because they just got rid of this song. But actually in 2020 director Brian Henson said that the song was cut at the request of Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was the chairman of Walt Disney Studios, because children in test audiences were fidgety while they were listening to that song. He said that he never forced him to do anything, but did say, "Do you see how antsy those kids were getting. It's just a little too adult emotional for kids to stay connected. So it was cut. And the movie certainly plays well without the song, but he obviously preferred having the song in. And he also said later that he thought it was good for kids to be pulled into deeply emotional moments, even if they felt slightly awkward about it when they're in a movie theatre. So now you get your DVD or Blu-ray, you can still watch this either as an extra feature or actually in the Blu-ray. Ooh. Little interesting trivia for you there about Muppet's Christmas Carol. It's also said to be one of the truest to the Dickens book as well, Christmas Carol, the Muppet version.
I disagree with that. I think it must be Scrooged.
Scrooged.
The closest to the Charles Dickens, because the whole television connection, I think obviously television was massive in Charles Dickens' day.
Yeah, and the old lady having a heart attack because she'd watched...
too much women dancing in leotards.
Exactly. Very true to life. And you have watched Scrooged this year.
I watched Scrooged yesterday, didn't I?
Yes, and this is a tradition of yours.
This is a tradition of mine. Scrooged, Planes, Trains and Automobiles, Curly Sue.
Why Curly Sue?
Because Curly Sue is a Christmas film.
Is it? I've never watched Curly Sue.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
I really enjoy Curly Sue. It really, like, goes at the heartstrings, but it's one of those films that's forgotten, sadly forgotten.
Sadly.
Sadly forgotten, but it's amazing. And, really nice sentiment. And not entirely predictable, which is good.
So we'll get on to traditions in a little while, but as you may know, last week there was a pantomime in the studio, and you may or may not have realised from our genius acting skills, but me and Spencer were not in the studio for that, despite Spencer's brilliant rendition of a booing man and my narration skills, which happened to come along with music as well. So we weren't in the studio, we were actually in Bergen. So we thought we would give you a little insight into... Bergen and what we did there, because there were some really fun Christmassy things that happen every year as tradition.
Should highlight Bergen, Norway, not Bergen, Germany.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good highlight. And also a Merry Christmas to anyone in Bergen at the moment in Norway or any of the Scandinavian countries, because of course if you're in Scandinavia you would be celebrating today rather than tomorrow. So in Denmark that might involve literally dancing around a Christmas tree, or in Sweden that might involve drinking some glögg, which we did plenty of while we were in Norway as well. So what was your highlight of the Bergen trip, Spencer?
My highlight of the Bergen... I'm slightly conflicted between the frozen lake and the gingerbread city.
So the gingerbread city. I think this is probably the most impressive thing about Bergen at Christmas.
Yes.
I thought that I was really good at making gingerbread houses. It seems not. I was not born into the life of gingerbread house making.
I mean, there was some extreme gingerbread skills there. And I think, you know, it is probably one of the most impressive displays, you know, of an indoor model village, let alone being made out of gingerbread.
And that's essentially what it is. It's an indoor model village, and it's hosted at CODE, the selection of art galleries across Bergen. And it really is an artistic masterpiece that has been made by pretty much every resident of Bergen and beyond.
Yes.
Including nursery school children, and there's some really bizarre gingerbread in there that they've kind of put in the cave at the back, which I think was probably my most enjoyable moment. So you're looking at this beautiful town, walking around it, taking pictures, and then they've made a cave, and in the cave is all of the weird stuff that they didn't know where to put.
I'd really like the concept, though, because, you know, it's not entirely compulsory, but it's kind of, you know, it's one of those things that everybody that lives there feels a sense of commitment to do. Mm. And as a result, what happens is all those crones that are all gathered together. Is it crones or kroners?
Kroners. Norwegian Norse kroner.
Where?
The pennies.
I keep confusing it with bowel issues. So they gather all these kroners together and... they use it for investment in the community. So a couple of years ago, all the money that was raised made this weird arch, which is kind of like a selfie spot with moving. So the inner circle of the arch has messages, doesn't it?
It seems programmable. And when we went to see the arch, there were some messages about sustainability and the rise in water across the seas in Norway.
It's really cool.
So yeah, you do feel a commitment, I guess, to make your gingerbread house to help raise some money for the town to create some embetterment of the town.
Yeah.
I thought another thing that was really nice about the gingerbread town is how inclusive it was. So you did have a lot of the makes from the children mixed up with the makes from the architecture firms and like some of the more professional ones as well. It's very good.
Yeah, it was really good. You know, boats and planes and, you know, TARDISes. TARDISes were quite popular.
There were multiple TARDISes in there, which was fun.
And they also, a couple of days later, we went to one of the museums in Code, and I noticed that a TARDIS had invaded a 18th century portrait, but we'll talk about that another time.
Was that in an Edward Munch painting? Was it in?
No, yeah. It was before we got to the Munch
exhibition. So going back to these Code, it's actually Code. If you pronounce it with the because it's one of those O's with the X with the line for it. So they have, what is it, five halls?
Four
halls, and it's a mix of contemporary artworks and non-contemporary artworks, including Edvard Munch. So there was a huge collection of Munch's artwork that was collected by a very rich man in Bergen, and when he died he left his collection to the city, which is an amazing thing for a city to be able to show. And we were lucky enough to go and see part of that, because half of it's travelling at the moment. It's in lots of exhibitions across the world in like modern art museums and all of this stuff. Did you have a particular favourite Munch artwork?
The one with the people with the very, very under...
Starry eyes, yeah.
Underdrawn, painted faces.
Yeah. Yeah,
I took a photograph of it, actually, and it was... Because it just... It's kind of haunting, really.
Yeah. Yeah, we found quite a few of them were haunting, and then some of them were just quite lovely. I really liked the portrait of the girl holding the cat.
Yeah.
If you want to see which artworks we're referencing, feel free to follow us both on Instagram, because I think you've posted that on Instagram, haven't you, Spencer?
No, I have. Do you know what? I haven't been on Instagram for ages.
Oh, have you not?
I've given it quite a wide berth lately.
Okay. But will you post a picture of that on Instagram?
Yeah, probably when we go away next week, I'll probably get back into the whole Instagram thing.
Well, there's a picture of the girl with the cat. It's an unnamed girl with cat. That's the painting, what it's called, and it's by Edvard Munch. I just feel like there's something quite, again, haunting about that painting. It's just a portrait of obviously quite a wealthy family's daughter, but yeah, she kind of stares through you and she's holding this cat, which is quite lifelike, even though it's not particularly painted in that much detail.
Natalie finds it haunting because Natalie sees it as being herself.
Yeah, it also looks a lot like me as a child.
But obviously, like, over 100 years before Natalie was born.
Yeah, I could have been that girl. I mean, I also like cats, you never know.
I feel like we should have the X-Files theme playing in the background.
Yeah. Or I might have been that cat, I don't know.
But Bergen was great. It's highly recommend, not too expensive. And, yeah, if you go up Floyen, especially at this time of year, there's an amazing frozen lake.
Yeah.
And, it was a lovely break.
Good for nature walks. They have all of the Christmas markets and stuff that you would expect. It is very, very cold. It's obviously by the harbour as well, so there's a lot of atmospheric water. You will get damp. But, yeah, it's lovely. What other things have we been up to? We've been watching a lot of films. I referenced Michael Caine earlier, so we watched The Great Escaper. That was quite a heartwarming film. What I quite enjoyed about that one was that actually it was quite a nice story. I was almost expectant that something terrible would happen at some point in the story, like he wouldn't be able to actually get to the place he needed to go, or something terrible would happen. But actually, it was nice. It was just a really nice story.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was Glenda Jackson starred in it, and it was her last film. And she didn't actually make it to the end of the film.
Oh, did
she not? The sadness of the story is, I guess, in the backstory, and that's that
she didn't
realize
that.
To complete all of her role. Apparently, they only went. There was supposed to be multiple scenes where they went outside, but they only went outside once.
Oh.
They only shot once, and they broke it up so it looked like they'd gone out over 2 days.
Is quite sad.
Really sad as well, because obviously Glenda Jackson is one of Britain's greatest actresses, having disappeared for probably 30 years from acting, and then returned after moving to become a Labour politician. She switched back to acting literally about 5 years ago.
Bizarre, isn't it? But yeah, she was great in it. Michael Caine was great. He came across as very, very old, which is bizarre, because when you see him out and about on the red carpet, he doesn't come across as very old at all.
But then, you know, that again, although he is still with us, he has said that The Great Escaper will be his last film.
Mm.
He's got a number of spinal issues and now can't walk without a walker. And he's often seen out and about in his wheelchair, and apparently the doctors have said that there's no point in operating because he's too old. So, yeah.
Wow. On a lighter note, we also watched Maestro. So this is getting lots of mixed reviews. Some people saying that Bradley Cooper could possibly win an Oscar for his performance in this. Carey Mulligan was cool in that too. What were your thoughts, Spencer?
I think it's just interesting because Leonard Bernstein is one of the great composers of our lifetime, yet managed to remain quite private, and then now you understand why it was so private. And Natalie did say at the start, on a lighter note, but it really wasn't that light to watch, was it? It was very, very dark, but a great film. Totally deserving, you know, like all these people saying, you know, why didn't you get a Jewish actor to play Leonard Bernstein? Bradley Cooper pulls it off. He pulls off most roles, but he really pulls it off. And
he was a very different character to what you've seen before as Bradley Cooper. What I particularly liked about the film was the curation all the way through. There were kind of these almost like juxtaposed moments where his life would just become a musical. Very bizarre, but very well moved into the scenes, because sometimes films try and do that and you think, oh god, that was unnecessary. But then with this, the curation of those dances and the way it cut to song or cut to somebody playing some music was really quite surreal in a good way.
And for quite an intense story, it's got quite a short running time, although it doesn't, I wouldn't say it necessarily feels like it's got a short running time, but it feels like there's a lot of story that's unpacked in 98 minutes.
Yeah
You know,
I can imagine
bear in mind
could have
these
been
sort of films, normally they end up going on for 2.5 hours, you know, plus. And this was, you know, it was 98 minutes all the way through. Lots of screen ratio changes, lots of colour to black and white, depending on what part of their time period they're in. I think pre-marriage, he was in black and white. And then during their marriage, it went to colour, but still in 4:3 ratio. And then later on in marriage, when his infidelity becomes more prominent, it moves to 16:9 ratio, which I thought was really fascinating.
You know what? I noticed that it was in black and white to start with, but completely ignored the fact that it went into colour at some point.
Yeah.
My brain just didn't even pick that up, which shows how smooth a transition that is. I didn't even realise. Like thinking about the film, I know that it was in colour at the end, but I don't remember the point where that switched. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, as I said, I think it was black and white until they were married colour, but still in 4.3, because back then there wasn't really any widescreen. It was all 4.3. Whether you went to the cinema or you stayed at home, it was 4.3. And then, as I said, when you moved more recently, and infidelity came on the cards, because he was a guy who was a closeted homosexual. And when it moved to that part of the story, then it all went into 16.9 and the colour really shone through. Great film, really good.
Kerry Mulligan was very good as well. Yeah. And I think, you know, Bradley Cooper obviously was an amazing lead, but she was amazing also. And I think she's not really been spoken about enough.
But again, another one of, you know, for a youngish actress, she is one of our shining stars. She is the Glenda Jackson of the next generation, this generation.
And she doesn't ever seem to age, does she, Kerry Mulligan? Like, she comfortably played that younger version of herself.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very good. And, of course, the other big, the big story this week, or big stories if you're into that sort of world, is Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire, which has just landed on Netflix. It landed, I believe, yesterday. And many people are comparing it to Star Wars and Game of Thrones. Now, this is going to be a multi-part film spread over every Easter and Christmas for the next 2 or 3 years. And, yeah, the first episode of the first... I say episode. They're films. They are films. They're made by Zack Snyder, and their cast is really quite interesting. So you've got Anthony Hopkins as a robot in a very small part in this film, but he's going to have a much bigger part in future ones. And then Sophia Boutella is the star, the kind of Jedi to this little gang of rebels. So yeah, that's Rebel Dawn, and that is currently on Netflix, with the second part arriving this Easter.
And we should probably get to some music, because I've just realised the time. It's almost half past. We've been talking quite a lot, but after this song, we're gonna have a little conversation about some Christmas traditions, and maybe Rebel Moon will make it into your Christmas traditions. Who knows? I mean, Spencer was watching Saw this morning.
I was watching Saw. Yeah. Saw X this morning.
Traditional Christmas Eve. Make sure you watch the goriest film you can...
To start the day.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly.
There is boy child, Jesus Christ, was born on Christmas Day, and man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. Christmas Day. Hark now, hear
Made a home. This country house had hundreds of steps, whilst this bungalow had none. And this little semi said, me, 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 make me your home.
Whatever your property requirements, Beresford's have it covered. To book your free valuation, pop into one of our 17 branches across Essex and into Greater London, or visit beresfords.co.uk.
Are you hungry? Then why not try an award-winning Indian takeaway from Hut and Spice? All our meals are cooked to order using the freshest ingredients, bringing you the finest traditional Indian dishes. To order, visit our website at www.hutandspice.com or give us a call on Brentwood 226 124 and see why we're the favourite choice of customers across Brentwood to Billericay.
The elements influence us each year, whether it's heat in summer or cold in winter. At JWD, we can take care of all your heating and air conditioning needs at a reasonable price, with finance available through our partners Can Do if required. Our engineers give their promise to be clean and tidy whilst carrying out works to the highest standard. Give us a call on 0776 009 239 or visit our social media pages at JWD Heating.
Phoenix FM. Phoenix FM.
Immerse yourself in the true Mediterranean essence at Leilina Modern Lebanese, nestled on Billericay's vibrant high street. Uncover the magic of our hidden garden. Sip on exceptional cocktails, savour unforgettable cuisine, and create cherished memories that linger long after you leave. Enjoy a complimentary glass of house wine when you mention Phoenix FM upon booking. Available Sunday to Thursday. Terms and conditions apply.
The all new Players Lounge has got everything you need for the perfect night out. With two bars, a restaurant and the best sound and lighting system in Essex. With regular special events and guest DJs, you're always guaranteed a brilliant night at Players. On the 5th of February, it's top DJ Roman Kemp. And on the 12th of February, it's the Stars of House with Marcus Dryden, Mickey Star Lewis and Daryl Privett. Check us out and book now at players-lounge.co.uk.
With the colder weather almost here, it's time to make those all-important home improvements to keep you warm and secure through the winter. Upgrading your windows and doors with FBH BAC will not only help improve the energy performance of your home and save you money on your heating bills, but will also keep you safe with the latest security features. Plus, get up to 35% off windows, doors, conservatories and extensions. Visit sehbac.com to find your nearest showroom and see our new product ranges. Terms and conditions apply.
Phoenix FM.
And we are back in the studio. Woo! The booing man is out again. So we were talking just before the music about some traditions of Christmas. You were talking about Scrooge as one of the traditions that you like to have at Christmas to watch.
Yeah, for me, there's the tradition of film, obviously being a massive film junkie, but there's lots of other traditions for other people that they might like to have. And we thought it would be good to talk about some of the traditions that we used to celebrate as children. So, can you think of anything that you used to celebrate as a child that you don't necessarily celebrate now, Natalie Bayes?
I mean, I can talk about the things that we do, and maybe we'll go on to the ones that we've lost later.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Just jumping ahead of yourself.
Well, you know.
Because there's obviously lots that we still do. So, for example, watching the Muppet Christmas Carol, I think films probably play a massive part, don't they, in how we spend our Christmases nowadays. So you watch Scrooge every year. As a family, we would always watch the Muppet Christmas Carol, probably about 67 times. Not really much else. My dad, when my sister was a lot younger, used to like to watch the Polar Express every year, because, you know, it's a film about a train. Did you have any films that you would watch as a child that you wouldn't necessarily be watching now, or...?
See, this is one of the points that I raised a little bit later on in this section, but was event television and movies. So throughout my childhood, the relationship that we had with film and television was quite different. So I didn't really have any like favorite Christmas films, and that's because Christmas was dealt with slightly differently. So what would happen was you only had four channels back then before the launch of Sky, and as a result, all of the great big films were always saved for Christmas. And then you would find that every single household across the land would be gathered round the TV watching the same films at exactly the same time. And that was part of the real magic for me of Christmas, was just to see all these massive, huge films. So when I think of Christmas, I don't always necessarily think about the Christmas films. I think about the time that Beverly Hills Cop had its very first screening, or Raiders of the Lost Ark. Those sort of films that screened over Christmas, there was always a James Bond film that came out in time for Christmas. Always think about last night. I had a kind of weird reliving of Christmas 1987, which was the premiere of two. I know we're not really supposed to talk about this guy anymore. Two Woody Allen films from 1987 that premiered on BBC Two in the same night, and that was The Purple Rose of Cairo and Hannah and Her Sisters. And I watched those back to back last night.
Hannah and Her Sisters. I think we watched that not that long ago as well.
I love Hannah and Her Sisters. I think it's absolute genius, and I will happily watch that at almost any time.
Yeah, it's very clever, isn't it?
Yeah,
like all of these conversational aspects, and that also has Michael Caine in it.
It does have Michael Caine.
We've been watching a lot of Michael Caine films recently.
Michael Caine in it plays like a a bit of a wayward husband who cheats with his wife, cheats on his wife with his sister.
Not his sister, her sister.
Her sister, yeah. Maybe he cheated with his sister. That would be a
no, I think
different
that's
film.
A different film.
But the interesting aspects are that when you look at the film, art truly does reflect life. And there were so many things that we now are aware that happened to Woody Allen and Mia Farrow that play out through Hannah and her sisters, and you don't know about it until you get caught up on the, you know, like all these court cases of which nobody's found been found guilty of anything as yet. All these court cases that have happened in more recent years, and actually you can see this story reflecting through Hannah and her sister. Everyone always used to say that Husbands and Wives was the one that showed the marriage of Woody Allen and Mia Farrow, but actually Hannah and her sisters is good. But Christmas does feature in Hannah and her sisters.
Yeah. What I find quite interesting about the writing behind that film is how much love actually takes from that with the relationship with Emma Thompson.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I kind of see that that is almost a modern version of a Woody Allen story arc there.
So but, other than event television and film...
Event television. Another thing that we used to do when we were children, and we don't do it anymore, is on Christmas Eve, every Christmas Eve, my mum would get the organ out. So she'd get out. The organ was in the room and we'd all have to stand around it. Or we'd get the keyboard out, which I was learning to play, and we would all sing Christmas carols for a good 2-3 hours together.
My goodness.
And to be honest, I really miss this. Not necessarily singing Christmas carols with my brother, because he would deliberately try to ruin them, but just singing on Christmas Eve.
That doesn't sound like Billy at all.
I like to sing Christmas carols. I went to a wedding recently and we were singing Christmas carols, and there's something that's quite quite nice about singing in a group. It's quite euphoric. And you know the words Christmas carol, so you can go on as long as you like. What I don't think I'd like to bring back is playing the clarinet as part of that Christmas carol service that we used to have in our house.
No, I can understand why that might be a little bit of pressure for you.
I think that tradition has also changed slightly in past years. So as my sisters got older, actually that's just turned into karaoke on Christmas night. And we've not done that for a couple of years, but who knows? Maybe tomorrow night we'll be doing karaoke until 1 a.m.
on the sofa.
You won't be able to sleep through that, Spencer.
You know me, I'll sleep through absolutely anything. Here's another interesting one, going to church. Do you know I've never been to church at Christmas?
No, I haven't, other than with the school. That wasn't a tradition with our family, but I know that for a lot of people it is. And again, I was talking to somebody at this wedding the other day, and they were saying the last time that they went to that church was a Christmas carol service on Christmas. I think it was Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. So a lot of people do it, and whether you're religious or not, I think there's almost like a calling that you should be going to church on that day.
I saw one of our neighbours this morning. He's the organist at the church at South Weald.
Oh, the
and,
little one.
David, and I saw him coming back from church this morning, and I just thought, you know, I'd love to. I'm not a religious person, but I'd like to know what that felt like to be there on, you know, like the key days, Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
Yeah. I imagine it would be quite nice. A lot of people do midnight mass as well, whether or not they're Catholic. And again, I think a lot of the church visiting without being religious is to do with music, isn't it? You know, people like to come and be part of a community and sing together and listen to music together. And being the organist for the church, you know, that's a really important part of that construct at Christmas.
I've noticed you put down here food eating rules.
Yes.
Come on, talk to us about food eating rules at Christmas.
So, my mum... On the lead up to Christmas, would buy all of the Christmas food that we were not allowed to touch until certain dates.
Right.
So these are food eating rules. I don't know whether you had the same, but, you know, over maybe November, December, the discounts would come out at various points, you know, like chocolate boxes would be 2 for 1 at QuickSave in November, and you would buy all of your chocolate then, and then you would be eating it over Christmas. But the over Christmas was very specific for children. So for us, we used to have like this little stocking that would have chocolate bars in it.
Okay.
That stocking would only come out on Christmas Eve, and you could eat as many of those as you wanted over Christmas. To some degree, I think my mum would have told us off if we'd been sick for eating too much chocolate. But as many of these chocolate bars as you want, and then the tubs of chocolate would come out on Christmas Day, and then you would eat them until they were gone. And there was always a box of food that we weren't allowed to touch because that was for Christmas. And, you know, the months would go past and you'd find some of this stuff in February because we'd never have enough time to eat the amount of food that my mum bought.
It's interesting, talking about chocolate. So I was having this conversation with Mad Susan, formerly of the Liberty, now of Lakeside.
You can't call her Mad Susan. Mad on, live
Susan.
On air.
Mad Susan.
She'd hate that.
So, I'm always
affectionately
having,
known
I'm
as Mad
having
Susan.
Conversations with Susan about chocolate.
Yeah.
And she can't eat chocolate. She's allergic to chocolate. If she eats chocolate, it will basically put her into like a coma. So, yes, she can't eat chocolate. But we were talking the other day about something that neither of us had seen for years and years and years. And that was those plastic vending machines that had the little bars of chocolate in it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You used to put the 5p in, yeah, or the penny in.
Yeah, I have one of those.
And you'd get a little bar, yeah, of chocolate. They need to bring those back.
Mini Bourneville or mini dairy milk.
Yeah. Do you think if they brought them back, they would just come with a compulsory card reader now?
I think that they don't exist because Woolworths doesn't exist, because that's where you'd get your refills.
Maybe, yeah, makes
and
sense.
The reason I remember this is because when I had one of these vending machines for the dairy milk, the dairy milk chocolate on their own would cost about 5p per chocolate, but on the machine it said 2p to get the chocolate.
Mm.
And my brother would take full advantage of this. A lot of hating on Billy today, but he would wait for me to fill it up and then go and put 2p in it until they were all gone. And the only way to get around this was to buy a Bourneville chocolate, because that would work out to about 2p per chocolate. So, you know, you wouldn't lose anything. But nobody liked Bourneville chocolate. They wanted dairy milk.
My dad liked Bourneville chocolate, but he was old.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, I say he was old. He was probably, you know, like
younger than
about
you are
40.
Now.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, isn't it? It was, Bourneville used to be such a massive deal, especially at Christmas. Who did you see at Christmas?
Literally everyone.
Did you see Santa?
We never saw Santa.
No, me neither.
No, Santa, you know, sometimes he appears for some children and you see him, see your mum kissing him or whatever. Never happened at our house. We'd put out the mince pie and some port, because that's what Santa likes to drink in our house, and a carrot for Rudolph. But yeah, we'd never see him, and he wouldn't appear until we went to sleep, whether that was 1 a.m. or 3 a.m. for excitement.
Yeah, but who else did you see?
Family. So again, this, in terms of tradition, when I was very young, we would traditionally, all of the family, go round to one of my aunt's houses and spend it with literally everyone and their cat. So aunts, cousins, nan, parents, siblings. And before going to this big event where you would all sit on a long table and eat your Christmas dinner, we would go and see my nan and granddad, my dad's side, and go and see all of those members of the family. Like, literally, we would see everyone. And I know that this isn't a tradition for most people. Most people, they'll spend maybe Christmas Day with their immediate family and then maybe see some other people.
I can think of nothing worse.
What, than seeing all of my family on Christmas Day? You can't say that live, Spencer. They might be listening.
Family. Like, although we had a massive family, our Christmases were like always for the inner circle. Christmas Day was for the inner circle, and then anybody else you would see them on another day. It would normally be like a maximum of seven at Christmas in our house, and that would be the maximum of seven people that we would see, except for our neighbour Mr. Thomas, who might come round and bring us some dodgy crackers that he got off of a market in Wales
in the 80s. We won't talk about those Christmas crackers live on air. We might be pulled off. But I remember you telling me about a Christmas occasion where you went to see all of your extended family.
Yeah, but that wasn't Christmas Day.
Oh, okay.
So there was a couple of things that happened. So there was two things that stick in my mind about Christmas. And that was, one was that, yeah, there was this mass gathering. And it was because the great-great-grandmother was approaching a certain birthday. Can't remember what that birthday was. It wasn't like a round number. It might have been like 95 or something like that. And there was this thought that maybe she might not make it in time. So we all gathered round the house, and then I've got that photograph.
Yeah.
With everyone in that one picture.
And it's four generations or five?
It was five generations in the same family. Yeah, it was
quite immense.
Yeah, it was a huge, huge family we had, and now it's, you know, virtually nothing.
Just you.
Just me.
And a couple of others.
Yeah.
Scattered literally across
Martin,
the country.
Martin and Heidi. Martin, who we see probably once every 2 years. Heidi, that I've not seen since the early noughties.
Wow. It's amazing, really. You can think that there were that many, because there must have been 30-plus people in that photo.
Easily.
Huge amount. And all of your aunts and, yeah, your grandmother, great-grandmother, cousins.
Yeah, yeah. So what's left? What's gone in those traditions?
Well, I feel like we see less people now. So I think maybe this is reflected in kind of your story, that actually people's families just go and move out and then they decide they want to celebrate in a different way.
Or is it because I'm so miserable, everyone else wants to just go somewhere else?
Well, I wasn't going to say it, but maybe. But yeah, I think the singing, definitely getting older, you know, it's not something as a teenager you really want to do. Oh, do I have to sing? Oh, I don't want to. And then maybe it's something actually as an adult you think, oh, actually it's quite nice, I can bring this back. And I think maybe that's where having children, becoming a new family, where you start to build those new traditions. Is there anything from your childhood that you would like to bring back in terms of Christmas traditions?
In terms of Christmas traditions, let me have a think about this one. I think if you think back, the magic of Christmas is still there for you, isn't it? Because there's still the mystery. I have to think, you know, if I'm including my entire family, I have to go like back quite a long way. My dad died very early in my life, so I have to go back to sort of like, you know, under 10. And yeah, there's quite a lot that was changed, quite a lot that was different there, you know, like the whole thing from Christmas. And so, yeah, there was a lot of change there, you know, night before Christmas, again, always the big film on TV. Dad wouldn't ever pay out for a colour TV licence, but we had a colour television which he kept in the loft. So what would happen is, knowing full well that the TV licensing people would finish the day before Christmas Eve, he would climb up in the loft and bring this massive TV down. And then Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Boxing Day, we would watch films on a colour television, which was massive. And that would be enjoyed with a collection of Twiglets, Cheeslets, Ritz crackers, Pult, Snowballs, or Baby Sham.
These all sound very familiar, actually. The snowball, definitely.
Do you know what I mean? Those things don't happen. You know,
we've not had a snowball in a while. We should have a snowball this evening.
We should. It's just sad. You know, it's just, you know, there's something magical.
People just don't buy egg liqueur anymore.
No, but there is something magical about a snowball, isn't there?
Yeah, I think it is, just because you don't drink it very often. It is quite special when you have it on Christmas Day, Christmas Eve. I was just having a think about other people's traditions and stealing them. Because, you know, as you go through life, you hear about what other people do for Christmas and you bring them in. And I guess, actually, if you do marry somebody, have some children, you're probably bringing in two different lives worth of traditions as well. I was just thinking, one thing that we do every Christmas that we never used to do was the present game. So this is a game that is played in Scandinavia where you all bring some ridiculous things, wrap them up, low price item, and then there's a series of kind of dice rolling, and then you win the presents, and then you swap the presents without knowing what they are, and then you open them all up at the end, and it's just a hilarious game.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you know what's in some of the boxes or packages.
Yeah, you buy three each, and usually you play with like six people or something.
I mean, this isn't something that happened until Natalie and I became a couple, so it wasn't something I was familiar with. And then I think it only started around that time anyway for you, didn't it?
I learned how to play the game from my friend Jenny in Sweden. I played it with her family.
Yeah.
And it was just so hilarious that some of the things that Jenny's family put in these gifts. Her brother just wrapped up a selection of rocks.
Well, let's put a spoiler in tomorrow's present game, because we'll find out now whether Natalie's family are listening to the show or not. So one of the presents that we've put in is a picture of Billy eating a sausage. So, Natalie, when she comes back in the new year, we'll be able to let you know whether the family were listening live or whether they were just going to listen on catch up, because most of the time they just listen on catch up, don't they?
Yeah, and they'll kick themselves for not listening to this live, because I don't think anyone wants that photograph of my brother.
We had to have that in our living room for a whole year, but we, being generous souls that we are, we're giving it back.
We're re-gifting.
We're giving it back to the community from which it came.
Yes, yes. So good luck to members of the Bayes family. You may take home that lovely photograph.
I hope we cleaned the dust off it before you...
Yeah, no, I have cleaned the dust off it. Is there any tradition that you've stolen, Spencer? Like anything that somebody else that used to see that you thought, oh, yeah, that's nice.
No, you know me, I'm quite boring when it comes to Christmas. My Christmas consists normally of the following things. Get up, lounge around, watch a horror film. Natalie wakes up, I start Christmas food prep. Then that will continue until the family arrive. And then in between food prep and serving food, I will fall asleep at various times during the day. Sometimes quietly, sometimes I will awake with an almighty snore and everyone will just be looking at me. That's my new Christmas tradition.
Oh, and Doctor Who, that's become quite a contemporary tradition, hasn't it?
Yeah, although obviously this is like the first year for 5 years that Doctor Who's been on Christmas Day. So,
it's true. But it's something I always look forward to in terms of television.
So yeah, tomorrow I think it's something like 5:55 Doctor Who, which turned out to be the most popular show of 2023,
wow,
returns. And so
and this is the one with the what are they?
The space elves. But the other thing being is this is the first time the Disney budget kicks in, so you're going to see the effect of what Disney bring to the fire of Doctor Who. You'll get to see how much bigger it makes the show.
That sounds
great.
So,
yeah, that's tomorrow with Shuti Gatwa and Millie Gibson.
Looking forward to that. Oh, and that film about Mog the Cat.
Mog the Cat? Is that what it is?
The one with the cats in. I think it's Mog. I don't know. It's the same illustrator anyway.
Some sort of cat.
Something about cats. It's the only advert this year that's caught my eye Christmas-wise, because there's animated cats. But anyway, let's have a little bit of music before going on to talking about some yesteryear traditions.
I'm gonna get to know you better this Christmas and better.
trim the tree. How much fun it's gonna be together.